Welcome back to another episode of the Modern Multifamily Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Wolber, and today I felt very lucky to sit down with Barbara Savona. Barbara is the CEO and co-founder of Sprout Marketing, and in this show, we go deep on her background, how she fell in love with property management, and the why behind her creativity and inspiration. I especially enjoyed hearing about the importance of proficiency and passion in everything that she does, and I hope you enjoy this very special conversation. Let's get into it. Barbara Savona, welcome to Modern Multifamily.
Thank you, Mike. I'm so excited to have this conversation.
Before we even jump in, I just want to say I think you're fascinating. And I'm really excited to dig into, you know, a little bit in your background, a little bit in your current state in Sprout, and a little bit about your why in terms of who you're focused on from a business standpoint. But I would love to start with a little bit of your story in terms of who you are and how you found the chair that you're in today as the CEO and co-founder over at Sprout.
Well, first of all, thank you. I'll try not to disappoint in this podcast. No pressure. But like, how far back do we want to go? I think my life maybe plays a little into it. I come from two parents that are foreign nationals. So my dad's from Mexico. My mom's from Germany. And so both of my parents came to the United States with not a ton of, you know, resources. So I just grew up in a very scrappy environment. My parents were entrepreneurs. They, you know, initially my dad started as a maintenance man in the multifamily industry. And so my mom would help clean and turn units when things were busy. And I remember just being a little kid that would be like doing my homework and things like that. And so that's kind of the pin of where multifamily was just an early part of my life, but I had no idea that it would become a big part of my life. And so, when I was in college, I got a job as a leasing agent, and 6 months in, my property manager got really sick and they asked me, I was working for Graystar, which is surprising, but it was a small community. They asked me to be the stand-in property manager. And so I just didn't know what I was doing, but I did the best that I could. And I fell in love with it. I had residents that would bring me tacos, breakfast tacos, and come and chat. I've always loved older people. And so I would sit and talk, and it was like the right community for my personality. And I found a love for it. I got married really young and just thought, okay, I can make this my career. And I did. And so I was a property manager for many years, and that's really where my love and my kind of my connection to property managers are, because I was that, that's who I was. And so, when I decided to leave, I went into the advertising space. I worked for Ferret Media Solutions, which is now CoStar. I got a lot of experience there. I worked for a startup magazine. Advertising is my background. And so it just was like the marrying of all the things that I loved. And when I decided to become an entrepreneur, it was always kind of in my DNA. I knew I would. It was just the right time. And this was the dream service that I wanted when I was a property manager. And so it just, a lot of things intersected at the right time. And that's kind of what got me in this seat today.
That's incredible. It's a great story. Before I have some follow-on questions for you.
Okay.
But would you mind maybe just like elevator pitch on Sprout? I've done a ton of research. I've joined your list. Like, I've been learning a lot from you on social as well as through kind of your email subscription component. But for people listening, maybe just the abbreviated what Sprout is, and then we'll continue on with kind of the why.
Yeah, for sure. So Sprout basically takes a systemized approach to grassroots marketing. So all the things that a property manager would need to do each month, their social media, their resident events, their follow-up, their outreach marketing, there's a lot of little pieces that are kind of considered grassroots in a really tech world. Their flyers, their social captions, their, you know, photography and all of that stuff. And so this is a subscription model. They become members. It's kind of unlike a lot of things in our industry. This is almost more like an online type of a membership platform, and property managers can get in, they can find the resources they need, they can customize them in Canva or have our designers customize it for them. And it's basically an extension of a graphic design company, but everything that's built in there, instead of like Canva, how you go in there and it's just for any industry, ours is all the taglines, all the like illustrations is for multifamily because it's created by people that understand this industry. So you're not having to come up with an event that you think, how do I tailor it? It's like, no, this was made to make residents get excited, or this flyer that is really cute, but it looks like, you know, something that you'd find in Anthropology. It was actually created with an Anthropology vibe, but to talk to that renter. So it's the marrying of all of those resources.
I love it. I have to ask, was this just born out of necessity? I mean, you've been in the front lines, your heart, you know, is at the front of the industry and you saw the need. Was it an accident? I mean, when you go to create something for as big as an audience as a property manager, most vendors don't do a lot to enable, you know, property managers today. Was this totally born out of necessity? Were people coming to you in the industry with the idea? Like, how did you go from property manager to vendor to actually starting up a company that's become as successful as Sprout?
Yeah, I think it's really listening to what your clients are asking beyond. So I was selling advertising, and you could continue to sell these larger advertising ILS packages. And I saw that that's where that was going. But on the side, I would have my clients say, Barbara, just come walk the property. What are you seeing? And I'd be like, they have enough leads. They're just not doing the connection with the resident or following through. It's like the little in-between things that make things sticky, that make things flow, and that get managers excited. So it was the service that I wanted as a manager. And I knew I would talk to managers and they would tell me, oh man, after hours, I'd spend 3 hours designing my flyer, or I'd write my social media captions and it only took me 4 hours. And I would look at it. And so because I was an operator also, and I was a regional for several years too, I was like, that's not what I want my property manager doing. And I thought, why is there not something that does all that, makes it fun? I wanted it to be fun. And I wanted ultimately the property manager to be the one that takes it over the finish line. So all of our stuff is like 90% done, but the property manager gets to put their touch of like, what do they want it to finally feel like? And I find that there's like this creative freedom when somebody says like, either I finished it out in Canva or I picked this and we're going to bring it to life. There's ownership, and the property managers and the leasing teams, they're the ones that are making it work. So when I hear them tell me every month, I cannot wait to see what you guys put out, and then we run with it and we do these events consistently, I know that consistency is what's going to win the game, but I want to make it as easy, right? So what gets in the way of consistency is ease, is a resident coming in your door and you just don't have the time to do it. So I thought, how can we remove all of those barriers? But I'll say it's not, our product is not for the lazy property manager. Like an ILS, you can put it up and the leads will come. Ours, if you don't use the program, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't work. So that was what the connection was, listening to my clients, what they were telling me, and then saying, how do we create for it? And I'll tell you the reason that we went with a membership thing was strictly business scalability. When I was working one-on-one, I would do these large contracts and I'd get paid well to troubleshoot, but then I'd have to invoice it and then I'd have to find another job. And there was that gap. And so my partner and I, we were, you know, driving from one of these projects and we said, we've got to figure out how to do this for the masses that doesn't feel disconnected, but it's also scalable. And so that's where the membership platform came. It's affordable, but literally we can work with thousands of people versus just a handful one-on-one.
That makes so much sense. And I believe your partner and co-founder's name is Lauren.
Yeah. And she's also my childhood best friend. So that's kind of a unique twist too.
That is a unique twist. I have to ask, in terms of like the evolution of Sprout, I'm sure it's changed over the years. What does it look like as a business that's growing to kind of create feedback loops, to get feedback of, you know, what else you can do to solve problems for your clients, or where you can go deeper as it relates to solving their challenges and kind of bridging the gap between marketing and more of the on-site enablement that you're tackling today at Sprout?
So we'll watch a couple of things, right? So all of our links, we can see where are people spending the most time. And, you know, that we just recently were looking back at some of the things. And you know, it's still the basic stuff. It's like resident event ideas. And you would think there's a plethora of that, but they want those easy things. But then something else is we survey really, really regularly. So I'll give kind of a little tip for people on getting like great testimonials, but also getting that feedback loop. A lot of times people struggle to get that feedback from their clients. And I try to send an email that says, hey, finish this sentence for a chance to win. And so it'll be like, if I was describing Sprout to my best friend, this is how I would describe it. And we get hundreds of feedback. Or if I say, if there was one thing that I could wave a magic wand and immediately it would be added to your membership, what would it be? So we do one sentence feedback. And we do it all the time. Or if there's one thing on the membership that you could like really care less about, what would it be? And so that kind of stuff helps us to make the changes. And then when someone tells us that they want more of that, that's then what we try to continue to do. But I will say, as a business owner and founder, I don't think that you 100% take all feedback. I also think it's important to be able to cast a vision and tell your clients where they need to go. And I think that there's that balance of feedback and then seeing the potential of where they don't even know yet, but that you know this is like the direction, and kind of making those roads cross where people feel really like they're heard, but they're also like, dang, I didn't even know I needed this.
Okay. Do you mind if we do a quick tangent and then we'll get right back into this?
Let's do it.
So have you ever heard the phrase, or the, I don't know if that's the right thing to call it. Have you ever heard of ephemeral content?
I don't know. It sounds familiar, but no.
Okay. So like ephemeral content is content that only lasts for a short amount of time. Prime time examples of this would be Snapchat. Or okay. Even stories on Instagram that are there for, you know, 24 hours, 12 hours based on your settings. And then they go away unless you logged it to your homepage. And my tangent for you as a business creator is that I think a lot of people do a lot of work for creating ephemeral content. I look at LinkedIn. I post every single day. And I have about 48 hours for someone to engage with that. And it's gone unless someone goes to my page and scrolls down my feed, which less than, you know, 0.5% of people do. So I think you are very smart to build a list through email. And I think that email is one of the longest lasting ways to get in front of people repeatedly versus hoping that they find you through, you know, ephemeral content. I just have to ask, was email always the vision, the subscription model, or was that something you fell into through attacking and, you know, testing other mediums of connecting with your audience?
I think what's interesting is the time frame of when I launched. It was 13, 14 years ago. And so who I used as my mentors were people that were building online businesses. So the Amy Porterfields, Marie Forleo, it's like all these people that now are kind of known in like a self-help, but at the time they were just building online courses. And I loved the idea of evergreen content. So that was the thing to do at the time, was get someone in a place that they're going to, you know, open up their, that is like their personal thing, but they're going to regularly see it at least once or twice a day. And then when social came on, I quickly realized, hey, this is a lot of work and I like social. So I too engage, especially I do Instagram a lot, but it's gone. And the same thing. So with email, I've had people on my list from 13 years ago that will still tell me, I love getting your emails each week. And so to me, that's something that was intentional, and it's something I don't outsource. So I do write all of our emails because I want it to continue to have that tone. And that's my connection point.
Technical tangent on the email side. Do you use just like one of the classic enterprise platforms like HubSpot for email, or do you use something more nuanced like Ghost or ConvertKit?
No, we have tried those, and actually we just use the one that's built into Squarespace. Wow. And it works fine. And there's a tagging capability so I can see where people came from initially. But we tried a lot of those, we did like ClickFunnels and different ones like that. And honestly, this just the simple, again, going back, I kind of try to do the things that I teach. I just do what is scalable and sustainable for us. And so, yeah, there's ways that sometimes we feel, man, we could get a little more nuanced, and we still experiment with a lot of those things, but we keep it pretty simple on the back end.
So you talked about Instagram briefly, and I was just doing some like lightweight prep yesterday for our conversation. And
you went down the tunnel on my Instagram dances.
I went kind of deep, and I'm not sure people can go check it out. I'll include the link in the show notes. My question is more around like, how did you decide where to spend your time on social? Did you know that your audience was going to be spending more time on the Facebook, Instagram side of the world versus LinkedIn, or did that come through experience? Like, I see a lot of people that are single dimensional as it relates to building an audience, whether it's for a side hustle or they're full on, you know, business like it is in your case. How did Instagram fit in for you? Because for a lot of people, I think they've forgotten about these other platforms that have massive, massive reach potential.
You know, I don't want to say that it was so intentional. I always teach, go where you're going to be consistent. And so I really am a consistency. That's my, if I would say secret sauce, it's where can I show up consistently? And I liked Instagram for the fact that I could be, you know, I think when people would see me speak, that was how I initially was. I'm very like serious when I'm speaking and I'm very much like, okay, we're going to learn and we're going to, you know, let's be actionable. But if I'm with my friends, I'm pretty silly. Like that's my personality. And Instagram allowed me to kind of marry both. And I saw that people connected. But I also saw that that's where the property managers were. And about 5 years ago, we used to sell to the regionals and we still do. But what we found is because we're a subscription model, it was so much better if a property manager said, I want this service. We have property managers that pay for the service out of pocket, which to me is always the most awesome testimonial, right? And then eventually they'll convince their management company to buy it. But that keeps our churn super low. And so 5 or 6 years ago, we said the messaging is to the property managers. We can have 100, you know, properties sign up. And when that happens, we might lose, you know, 75% because they've never properly bought in. So then on Instagram and Facebook, but Instagram, I just enjoyed more. I got more things from managers and they would respond and they'd be like, oh my gosh, this is exactly like I could be the manager because I had those scenarios. And so when I would, you know, joke about rent collection and, you know, I have to be careful because some of those videos have gotten me in trouble. But just when I would play some of those things, it wasn't like I was faking it. It's like, no, I went through this scenario. And the relatability factor has been really important for me. And I'm playing a fine line. So even something I want to eventually talk with you about is, you know, I had someone talk to me the other day about a year ago and say, you're a business person. Why are you not on LinkedIn? You're missing out on showing people outside of your personality. And I'm exploring that world. And it's this interesting balance because I feel like, yes, I can connect and I love having those conversations. But at the core, my message is for the property managers.
I think my biggest takeaway, just like hearing you riff a little bit there, is like knowing who you're trying to talk to is so important because you see a lot of people doing something and outside looking and not judging them, but questioning like, why are you doing that here? And there is a like, if we build it, they will come motion that to a degree is real. TikTok, what it is today, no one I think would have forecasted it 3 years ago when we were all doing goofy dances. I sure was, and I still do. But like knowing who you're trying to get in front of, I think is a really important takeaway. And I see a lot of people in our space, you know, obsessing Facebook and Instagram. And I think for a minute I was judging them. And now it's like, no, that's super intentional. Their people are engaging content there and they're logging into LinkedIn or Twitter once a year. So I think being intentional in how you choose to spend and where you choose to spend your time is such a secret sauce.
Well, and you know, to your point, I think there's a place for everything, right? So the content that I'm sharing on LinkedIn, I'm still trying to figure that out. And I can connect with the CEOs, the co-founders, the VPs of operation from a business perspective. And I'm enjoying doing that too. Like, I love those conversations. But I always like when I do an interview on my podcast and I talk to a CEO, I always ask them, like, what do you want the property manager? What do you wish a property manager knew to try to bridge that gap? Because when I was a property manager, I always wanted to know what my leadership really wanted from me, but I never had the opportunity to talk to the CEO of Graystar. But how cool if I could be listened to a podcast where he said, man, if my manager just knew one thing, that would be so cool. I mean, and to me, that is like, what a cool way to marry that, you know, I can get the respect from a CEO because they've seen what we've built, but I can ask the questions that a property manager wants to ask because that's the angle that I'm approaching it from. And, you know, my goal is to not disconnect from that. And sometimes I have to check my content and make sure, am I writing this for like the mics and my colleagues? Because there is a little of that. You want them to think like, oh, this person knows what they're talking about. Or am I writing it for my end user? And so it's sometimes humbling as you do some of these things. And I'm like, and even the dancing on Instagram, you know, this friend of mine said, you know, don't you feel that that would be viewed as unprofessional? And I'm like, you know what? Maybe. But the reality is if we're at a conference, we have a couple of cocktails, I'm going to be giggling and dancing. And so, And people will connect with that. So if that's a weird thing, I'm okay to alienate some and attract the ones that do want to connect.
I think that is like so spot on, because too many people put on their, professional voice, and then you meet that person and it's like, that's not who you are.
Yeah.
And I think figuring out a way to like bring both sides and knowing when to flex it and when to kind of like tuck it back is important. But I think that's super spot on. Okay. I've got two more questions for you before we end with my classic curveball. You've been an inspiration to me for a few different reasons. You've built a business that to me is really cool. And it's also really nuanced. And a lot of people reach out to me and they ask for advice on how to start something that's not their core business, with the aspiration of eventually maybe having something that's their own full time. And you started this and it's turned into something quite real. And for people that are thinking about side hustling versus going all in, do you have any advice there in terms of people that are looking to dabble versus like, no, I really want to go for it. I want to be a consultant, or I want to be a full-time creator, or whatever the thing might be. And this question might be a bit ambiguous, but I'd just love to see if you have a take there.
Yeah, I do. I have a few, actually. I think it really depends on what you're trying to do and your whole financial picture as a whole. So I share this advice. It's, if you're not in extreme debt, you have a lot of flexibility and a lot of freedom. And so I know everybody is in different places in their life, but if I could give that little piece of advice, it would be like, the freedom I had with Sprout was I didn't need somebody else's money, not because I had so much, but I didn't have a lot of debt and I didn't take a lot of debt. So for me, there was this like runway. My husband and I had a time frame that I could make it work. And it allowed me to make decisions not based on fear, which I think is a huge thing. It wasn't like I said yes to everything because I didn't need to. I've continued to operate that way, which honestly has been probably one of the best pieces of advice, because I can say no to things because I'm okay with where I'm at right now. And then, so that's one piece of it. And then as far as like deciding, I would literally see what is it that people come to you for. So for me, I was like the fixer, like, oh, this is complicated. Make it simple, make it easy. What are we missing? And to me, it was very obvious little things that can make a huge difference, but it might be that you're a tech person, or it might be that you just have this knack. I would say try to marry I've been saying this a lot, where your proficiency and your passion come together, marry that. And then the third is make it scalable with recurring revenue. So for me, the subscription model allowed me to build something that said, we have X number of income that's coming in every single month that we can count on. And then it allowed us to play with other revenue models, but the scalability. So like where I see problems with someone just wanting to go out and be a consultant, that's absolutely doable, but come up with a retainer, come up with a membership program that then, after you implement the first thing, have a 10-step video series that follows that. And, think about ways that you can be making money when you're not actually in the room. That's to me the secret, is like have a free printable, have a free ebook that then leads into a $20 evergreen course, and have that going and selling. And I think really think about making that. It gives you a little bit of like this like freedom to where you're not trying to pay the rent because you know that you have money coming in.
That was good. I'm going to write down proficiency and passion. I think finding the balance and almost intersection there, that's very quotable.
Yeah.
Last question. You strike me as a creative, and I listened to your conversation with Mike on his show from December of 21. And you talked about like what it's like for you to walk through a store and how you're like looking for and like noticing things, where Mike talked about how he just like goes in, gets the thing he's looking for and leaves. Like he's not like blinders are on. And for someone like you who's building, who's creative, who's thinking long-term, who's solving problems that to you are repeatable for others, they're like, how do I build this tagline? Do you have any go-to tips for finding inspiration? Is it reading? Is it consuming great content? Is it just keeping your eyes wide open? I'd love to hear any parting thoughts on seeking inspiration.
I mean, I'm a learner, like at heart. I love to listen. I listen to too many podcasts, but all different types of things. I read a lot of books. But I also think about moments when I'm just really happy, and I figure out how I can replicate that in marketing. So if it's something like as simple as like, you know, I live on a piece of property and there's just the moment where like the air is super crisp. My dog is like, looks like he's smiling at me while we're walking. And I'm like drinking a really nice hot cup of coffee. And I think about how can I make that feeling feel that way in an email, or say somebody at a store makes me feel really good and they just said one phrase or something. I'm like, how can I replicate the feeling? I'm a feeling person. I think feelings are such a big deal to me. And so I'm always like, what is the end of the day? What I'm trying to like make someone feel. And then I think, how can I do that either with words, with colors, or, you know, different things like that. And then I'm also old fashioned. So I think about when things become rare, they become valuable. So it's like, how can I make a letter feel like a handwritten note or an interaction feel special? So that's kind of, to me, it's like, I'm just paying attention to the moments that make me feel really good. And then I'm trying to replicate that from a marketing perspective, but trying to keep it authentic.
We'll have to do a part two on that. I think about that one a lot. And I think a lot about creating feelings for other people. And I think there's something very special there in creating experiences and memories. And like, there's such a long-term measurable value that comes from that. But thank you for sharing.
I think your content on LinkedIn reflects that well, because after I feel, when I either feel inspired, I feel, you know, so I think that very much so, like you get that feeling too. You know how important that is.
I think about it all the time, and thanks for saying that. Hey, my last question for you is a very like softball curveball. Do you have any questions? Do you have any questions for me before you wrap up today?
Yeah. You know, I am very curious at how, because I feel like you're very sales oriented, but you still have the ability to connect with people in a really meaningful way. How do you marry the system of being a salesperson, but also having those connections that feel real and it not feeling salesy?
I am a salesperson. I am a salesperson through and through, and I am a sales guy and I wear it on my chest. And that is an accurate observation. I think the thing that probably is a little bit different for me compared to others that identify as sellers as well is that I'm incredibly patient. And I think there's something to be said about believing in long-term, not short-term, and believing that if you build, you know, credibility and a brand for your business and for yourself, that in the long-term, you'll have so many opportunities versus churning through the short term to go get those short term wins. And I think for me, our industry is nuanced. It's very cyclical. It's very relationship driven, and making sure that every moment is intentional and every experience is memorable, and making sure that every customer or prospect that didn't ever turn into a customer had a good experience with either myself, my team, or our business. Those are the things that really, I think, set me apart. They're subtle, but they end up being pretty significant.
That's awesome. I'd love hearing that. So have you always been patient? I know this is not, I'm going to take over. Let's left.
No, and I'm not patient. Like I classically want to jump in and not interrupt, but like be part of the conversation, or I want to ask for the close or the next step. And one of the most like tactical but like helpful things over the past few years has actually come from a technology we use called Gong. It records all of our sales conversations, and one of the metrics that they report on is patience. And Wow. And one of the patience metrics is, do you wait at least one full second before you talk after your customer or your prospect? And I was last on the scoreboard of a team of 40 because I'm excitable and I just like who I am. And that little piece, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, woke up this like, hey, slow down, Mike. It's okay. When you shut up, they talk more. You connect about the real stuff, and you end up, you know, starting conversations that are largely personal that turn into business. And that gives you this reality that people sell to people. People buy from people, not from companies in this modern era. And the more patient you can be, the more opportunity you can create and manufacture to create real, authentic connections. So Gong has actually done a lot for me personally to turn myself into now being number one on the scoreboard when it comes to patients.
So it took a competition and now you are the most patient. That is awesome. It just shows that it is a learnable skill.
Totally. 100%. It is a skill, not a strength, in my belief. Barbara, you've been a great guest, and this will be a fun one for me to write up from a show notes standpoint, and we'll definitely have to do a round two. But for today, I just want to say thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.